This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
What's cracking? Welcome to the program. We start hour number two. Ended hour number one, I thought, with a great conversation with Jordan Poyer of the Buffalo Bills. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. All right, so get yourselves together. What do you want to hit on? So many things coming off the NFL weekend and heading into the NFL postseason. Oh, by the way, a college championship game as well. There is that. Klay Thompson made his return. There is that. Lots to cover, but before I do anything else, we are joined right now by an NFL.com senior columnist, an NFL Network on-air talent, a Sports Emmy Award winner, a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day. I consider him a good friend of the program. I respect him a lot. Jeff Chidiha is my guest. Jeff, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing, Jim?
Good, dude. Good. Great to hear your voice. Great to have you back. All right, so let me pick my spots here. There's obviously a ton, Jeff, to talk about coming off the weekend and going into the upcoming weekend, but we got to start with last night's game, Chargers-Raiders. What did you make of how that whole thing unfolded, and have you ever seen anything quite like that?
Yeah, I haven't, but it was great for the NFL. It was great theater. Personally, I sat there watching into that game. I was texting with some friends of mine, and I said, Raiders are running out the clock. I mean, they're going to take the tie. Nothing to lose here. They're in the playoffs. And all of a sudden, Brandon Staley does what Brandon Staley does, takes a timeout, kick the field goal, game over. And I know he's taking a ton of heat, and I have to say that I'm on that bandwagon. I feel like I understand what he's trying to do with the Chargers this year. A little too aggressive for my taste, but I also want to give a lot of love to the Raiders, man. It's like I've said all year long, I live in Kansas City. People always talk crap about them. And I said, this team's not going to fall apart. Whatever they go through, they're different tone to them. And they showed out. So congrats to them.
We're talking to Jeff Chidiha. You know, there's a lot in there in that response that I want to get to. But for the Raiders, given how their games, Jeff, went against Kansas City this year, how big of a difference was it to go from facing Kansas City to facing Cincinnati? And was that part of their mindset?
You know, it might have been. I didn't think about that aspect of it, but it's certainly a better setup for them. Now, the Bengals did give the Chiefs all they could handle and beat them. But, yeah, part of me with the Raiders playing the Chiefs both games this season, I thought there was a stubbornness. I think they were so unwilling to change their approach, an approach that has worked for other teams playing the Chiefs this year defensively as far as slowing them down. But I think more so, I think it's just about, I think they wanted to go into the playoffs with some momentum and the belief that they can win games and that they continue to do what they've been doing, which is playing hard, finding ways to win, playing with toughness. I give that head coach, Rich Biasucci, a ton of credit because that team easily could have fallen apart.
Jeff Chidiha is joining us. You know, based on who you've spoken to and based on what you see, how do you think that plays out? I mean, still, lots of amazing opportunities in front of them. But in terms of him as a potential long-term or permanent head coach, how much of a shot would you give him?
Right now, probably 10%. Mm. You know, I think it's a lot of big names going to be out there on the market. And as good of a job as he's done, I think you'd have a hard time finding a lot of interim coaches in this league in the last decade who've done well when they've gotten a job full time. I mean, the list is pretty short. And so I do believe that they'll probably make a run at Jim Harbaugh. And he's tight with Mark Davis, the owner there. There's plenty of guys out there from the Kellen Moores, the Eric Bieniemies, the Byron Leftwiches. There's a ton of coaches out there who've been waiting for the opportunity. But, I think that it's going to be tough to get that job unless he just ends up holding the Lombardi Trophy in February.
Hmm. Jeff Chidiha joining us. All right, so Kansas City had manhandled the Raiders twice this season, and we talked about that. In terms of their defense, they had a tough time to end the season, the regular season, but they played much better of late. When you look at Kansas City and you look at them defensively, what kind of thoughts do you have right now?
I have questions, and I had questions when they were on that 8-game winning streak and they were playing so well because they didn't see Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. They saw Dallas, but Dallas didn't have Amari Cooper. CeeDee Lamb got hurt in the game. Dak was, you know, in that slump that he'd been in. And so, really, they'd beaten up on a lot of teams like Denver with Teddy Bridgewater, the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger, the Raiders, obviously. And so, I wanted to see them against a really good offense. And when they saw the Bengals, it was a different story. And when they saw Denver on Saturday, Drew Lock, it was a different story. So, my concern there is that if Chris Jones isn't playing out of his mind, that defense is a different defense. And so he's the key for everything there. When he moved the defensive tackle, they got better. When he hasn't been making a ton of havoc, they haven't been good. So they got to get him going for the postseason.
Right. So what about the other side of the ball? Earlier this season, Patrick Mahomes did not look anything like Patrick Mahomes when it came to turnovers. Now he's got one interception in his last five games. So what was happening earlier in the season, and what do you think has changed since then for him?
Well, I think what changed was that teams were obviously taking away the deep stuff, playing a lot too high safeties. That's why I was laughing with the Raiders were doing, because I said their defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, he was too high. He didn't have a too high approach. He was just too high in how he defended them, because they were scoring a lot of points against that defense. And I think Patrick Mahomes realized, let me take what people give me. Let me throw the ball to players like Byron Pringle and Mecole Hardman and Demarcus Robinson and Darrell Williams and checkdowns. And he got comfortable with that. He wants to be an aggressive quarterback going down the field, making big plays. But now he's found a way to accept driving the football. The only thing I'll say about that is what made them special was that quick strike ability. And without that, they aren't as imposing to opponents as they would have been in previous years.
Right. Jeff Chidiha joining us. All right, so I had Bills safety Jordan Poyer, as I mentioned on the program last hour. You know, Buffalo, Jeff, took a lot of heat earlier this season when they were losing to the Colts, the Pats, the Bucks. How do the Bills look to you right now?
I'm a big fan of the Bills right now. And it goes back to watching them play against Tampa in the second half of that game they lost in overtime when Brady hit Breshad Perriman for a game-winning touchdown pass. And they were getting their butts kicked. They were down 17 points. Josh Allen was getting blitzed like crazy. And somehow, some way, he found a way to will that team back into that game. He ran for 100 yards. He threw for 300. And I thought that could be a turning point for them. And ever since that point, a game in which they didn't hand the ball to the running back once in the first half, they've rediscovered the power of the running game. They've gotten Devin Singletary more carries. And Josh Allen has become, a more consistent player. He had one tough game against three-interception game a couple weeks ago. But overall, you go into New England and you throw for 300 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. That tells me you're on the right track. So I like where they're going right now with what they're doing offensively.
I do, too. Now, you mentioned Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay has won 7 of their last 8, right? So normally when you see a run like that, you think that's a team that's peaking at just the right time. But does it feel that way to you with the Bucs?
It doesn't. And as much as I'm a Tom Brady fan, I've known him for a couple of decades. He's a Michigan guy like me. If he wins the championship this year, what they've been going through, that would be his greatest feat, because you lose Chris Godwin, you know, Leonard Fournette's banged up. I think the key to his success in Tampa and late in New England was he was playing with players he trusted. And now he's going to be throwing the football and relying on people he hasn't trusted as much as the Godwins, the Fournettes, the Mike Evans. I know Fournette's going to be back in it. And so it's just going to be a lot harder. And when you have what happened with Antonio Brown, with that whole strip show meltdown, you know, whatever it was, I think that kind of drama at this point in the season has a ripple effect on the team. And they spent a week talking about that, and they can say what they want to, but it affects you. It affects your locker room. And so there are other teams out there who are just as good as Tampa, and I think those teams are probably more mentally stable right now than Tampa is.
So, Jeff, quick sidebar. You mentioned the fact you're a good Michigan man. How about Jim Harbaugh? Like, what's your gut tell you? What do you think that he wants at this point in his career? What do you think that he does?
I think he wants his money back.
Right.
He wants that money. Yeah. He took a big pay cut last year when he was 2-4. So I think more than anything, I think he'll listen to overtures from the NFL. I think he'll enjoy the victory lap he's been on, even though they had a tough loss to Georgia. He did a great job with that program, turning it around this year and getting into the Big Ten championship and the college football playoffs. But I think first and foremost, he wants to be paid. Anytime you see what they're paying a coach in Michigan State, what they're paying the coach in Penn State, what the coach from Oklahoma just got to go to USC, that kind of money, I guarantee you Jim Harbaugh is saying, I want a piece of that. So more than anything else, I think he's going to stay at Michigan, but he's going to find a way to get into that, back into that high upper echelon salary range.
Hey, listen, I'm not on the inside, but it seems to me that there's no doubt in my mind Michigan will give him that money back. They don't want to lose him at this point, right? I mean, I guess the better question would be, is that all it would take to get him to stay at Michigan, just getting that money back?
I believe it would. Let me put it this way. The only way Jim Harbaugh is going to come back to the NFL, if he's able to get the kind of deal that Pete Carroll has, the kind of deal that Andy Reid has, where you have a GM working with you, alongside you, who you trust, who you're compatible with, who is going to basically do your bidding, like Belichick has had in New England. And so I don't see him coming back. People mentioned Jacksonville, where Trent Baalke's already the GM, who he sparred with for years in San Francisco. I don't see him going back for a structure like that. Every college football coach of his level, of his caliber, is a god on campus. I think that goes a long way towards making you feel good about life, as long as you get that money to go along with it.
Jeff Chidiha joining me for a few more moments. All right, Jeff, what about, given the way yesterday's game ended, I'm talking about the Rams and the Niners, which of these two teams would scare you more as an opponent, the Rams or the Niners right now?
You know, the Niners are scary just because they've been in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and they've got some things that, like Nick Bosa, like George Kittle, like Deebo Samuel, guys who can make a lot of plays. But I feel like the Rams, when they're right, they're as dangerous as any team in the NFL. And the real question, even though they lost that game yesterday, I think they showed a level of physicality that had been lacking in previous games they've played. It's no secret that they get pushed around by teams like Tennessee, like the 49ers. And even though they gave up a big lead, I still feel like when they get it going, if Stafford is on his game and not turning the ball over, they can beat anybody. So I go with the Rams.
So I got to ask you that. Having said that, as good as the Niners were in that comeback, and as good as Jimmy G was, and he did step up, he clutched up, and you know he's not right physically, how do you like that matchup of Garoppolo going up against that Dallas defense?
Well, I tell you, you watch Micah Parsons up close and personal.
Yeah.
And he's as close as you might get to, you know, a young Lawrence Taylor in this league, in terms of the kind of havoc he can create. That's a great matchup, and I feel like if the Niners can run the football, they can create some issues for them, because Dallas is really built more for speed and I don't want to say they're a finesse defense, but they aren't. They want to get after the quarterback. They want to get a lead and then let those guys like DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, Micah Parsons, just hunt. And so if the Niners can run the football effectively, it's a different story. But if they can't, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo's going to be running for his life.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. And you can run on Dallas. You simply can run on Dallas. I agree with you. But that's going to be something. One last thought, and you've been really good on all this stuff and with your time. It was not that long ago, Jeff, that the Cardinals had the best record in the NFC. Do you have a pretty accurate read on them going into the postseason, or is this still a totally wide-open question?
I don't. They're mystifying. I saw them in person in Dallas a couple weeks ago, and I was really impressed by how they played, controlled the game up 22-7, were all over Dak Prescott, and shutting down the Cowboys' run game. And then they come back and lay an egg against the Seattle team that has nothing to play for, give up almost 200 yards rushing, which has been an Achilles heel for them all year long. I think they have a lot of resilience to them. Because you look at the way they played when Kyler Murray went down, and you look at the 7-0 start, and they won a couple games, and they've had a lot of COVID issues and injuries. But without DeAndre Hopkins there, that's a big loss. And I think it shows up when they need to make a clutch play and make things happen, even in Kyler Murray's body language. There's something that's a little bit off there. So they made a lot of pressure on him to make a lot of plays, and some of the other guys in that supporting cast, because they cannot afford to give up 190 yards rushing to any of these teams, because they will lose in a hurry.
I think that's really interesting what you just said about Kyler's body language, because I love the guy. I mean, I'm an enormous Kyler Murray guy. I love the guy. But I got to be honest, I have not loved his body language the last few weeks. I think it's interesting that you said that. What do you make of it when you see that?
I think it's a young quarterback who is super talented, who's used to doing whatever he wants to do on the field, and is – really had a lot of success. He would have been the MVP if he had stayed healthy and stayed on the track he was, the trajectory he was on when this year started. And I think he's just not used to having to struggle. And so in some ways it reminds a little bit of Cam Newton. And I don't know if it's necessarily it's not a bad thing, so to speak. I think it's more of he doesn't understand how that projects to everybody else. I think he's frustrated. He wants to do well. But that look he can have, that in his eyes and his slumped shoulders, that goes a long way towards affecting people around you. When you're a young quarterback, you got to understand that can happen.
Hmm. He is an NFL.com senior columnist. He is an NFL Network on-air talent. He has won an Emmy, a Sports Emmy Award winner. Good friend of the program, a panelist from our daily TV show way back in the day. Jeff, good to have you back. I really appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Hey, always a pleasure, man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jeff. Great talking to you. Appreciate the friendship. Jeff Chidiha, really talented. And some really good information. All right, so we've hit the NFL hard. Two really good interviews to start the program on a Monday. So we're wide open right now. Let me check and project. Where are we in hour number three? Still wide open. Well, I don't know. This might be the day. This might be the day I interview one of you. Maybe. When we come back, I want to get into Black Monday. Guys getting broken off. Told hit the bricks. Except for one guy. The one guy who should. Joe Judge. I'm not looking to get anybody fired. I'm just going to pose the question. How the hell does that guy still have a job? Especially based on the way they ended the season. We'll get into that. Indianapolis with one of the all-time tank jobs. And I'm no hot take artist. I'm not saying crap just to say crap. I don't throw that around lightly. I'm not going to call somebody or a team a bunch of joke artists. I'm not just going to throw that around. Like, I think about that long before I say that. Those choke artists melted down in a horrible way. All you have to do is win and you're in and beat a team looking at the first pick overall for the second year in a row, and you can't do that. You're 16.5-point favorites, and you can't do that. And not only did you not win, you got your face caved in. It's a bad deal. That's a choke job. Oh, that's still ahead, and your phone call is 1-800-636-8686.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So what do you make of Jeffrey Chidiha saying that Jim Harbaugh essentially wants his money back? That he's not looking to leave? That he had to take that big pay cut with Michigan? And by the way, understandably, right? He was not getting it done. And then he had a huge year. But if you're Harbaugh and you have to take a big pay cut, obviously that's a big, big blow to his bank account and his ego and his pride. And then you see Mel Tucker get that incredible contract. You know, that's got to aggravate you no end. And then you show up and you finally handle your business after 7 years and you get to the college football playoff. You get hammered, but you got things turned around and all of a sudden now you're feeling really good about you and people are blowing your phone up once again. So what do you think is important to him? Jeff Chidiha, who's a good Michigan man, said, you know what? I think he doesn't want to go. I think he just wants his money back because he knows that in Michigan he's a demigod and can do what he wants and say what he wants. And if he gets that money, then why would he have to leave? I wonder. Maybe. Possibly. Or he could take a look at the NFL. And if the right opportunity presented itself, I think that if he could get NFL money and then get the kind of autonomy and power that Jeff was talking about, then maybe so. The question is, who gives it to him? Obviously not Jacksonville. Not, well, Trent Baalke's there. But would Stephen Ross give it to him? I mean, Ross was awfully quick to blow out Brian Flores, which we'll get to momentarily. So why did he do that? Was he that dissatisfied with his head coach? Or did he do it because he knew that he had a shot at Harbaugh? Or did he do it because he thought that he had a shot at Harbaugh? Or did he do it because he knows that the Raiders would have an interest in Harbaugh? Or did he just do it because he thought that Flores was not getting the job done? I don't know. It's all really intriguing. Meantime, we are chasing, like lots of you are making comments about, all right, so the Bills have karma. We are chasing as many teams that are in the playoffs as we possibly can right now to get as much karma as we can. Like this guy, Rome, was Jordan coming in considering jungle karma, signed Bills Mafia? I don't really know. We have a really good relationship with that team. We have a really good relationship with that secondary. You'd have to ask Jordan. I don't know, he's a pro. He's a pro's pro, but maybe karma factors in. It says, Dear Indianapolis Colts, even we think losing to the Jags is a bad look. regards the Giants running a QB sneak on 3rd and 9.
This ain't some clown show organization.
Geoff and Lincoln. The thing is, Joe, that's exactly what it is. If you're running a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 when you have nothing to play for other than pride and maybe some momentum going into the offseason, how else would you define that? What the hell is that? I know you have a reason. I just don't have any idea what it could possibly be. You always have a reason and an excuse for everything. A quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 for a season that ended months ago. For who? For what? To give the punter a little more room? Are you kidding me? Are any of you going to come in and try that with me? A quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9. The hell is the point of that? Name one other coach that would do that and act like it was the right thing to do. Wells in the 360 is in. How this guy continues to get through, I have no idea. Quote, Dave Gettleman, quote, retired? What's next? Saying that Ron and Nicole retired from living?
Oh.
This is what I mean, Wells. Dude, I never want to bite the hand that feeds. But you need to retire, Wells, from the show, I think, at this point. If you're turning that into a Ron and Nicole retired from living. Wells, I don't know if you know this. They were butchered in cold blood. Essentially decapitated. Still too soon, Wells. 500 years from now, it will still be too soon to send somebody the Twitter equivalent of that. Whatever the platform is in 500 years, it will still be too soon. You're the one who should contemplate retirement, Wells, from the show. Great Blue Dini tweets, the Steelers in the playoffs is like that super senior that hangs out in his high school parking lot. Nobody really knows why he's there, but everybody is just used to him being there, so they allow it. Yeah, that was some way in, wasn't it? At Tackle Box Ready 1 tweets, Justin Herbert really converted 25 straight 4th and 10s in a row, only to have to watch Ben Roethlisberger put up 115 yards and 2 picks against the Chiefs next weekend. Steelers didn't hammer that out, man. You talk about a grind. You talk about grinding one out. Well, Ben's out there fighting for his life. Clearly not nearly what he used to be, and just grinding. 4-yard completion, 2-yard completion, 7-yard completion, move the chains, 4th down conversion, somehow, some way. Brendan says, Dear Jim, can you please explain karma to me? Thanks, Dean Spanos. There's a whole lot of that, but understand, it's not just the karma and it's not just the move. This is kind of what the Chargers do and have done for a long time. They find new and more gut-wrenching and inventive ways to lose. Charger fan is used to it. This guy, James, quote, Raiders, Patriots, Steelers, Bucks, all in the playoffs, well played, Antonio Brown. That's interesting, isn't it? Raiders, Pats, Steelers, Bucks. Raiders, Pats, Steelers, Bucks, all in the playoffs. And Mr. Big Chest on the sideline, on the outside looking in. At General Ledger tweets, Jim, that Jaguars team really kicked it into high gear yesterday. Great job, you losers. Signed, Pervin Liar, tweeting from Hooters in Columbus.
Stayed to see the grandkids.
Ian in Chicago. Come on, Ian. Ian, do better. You know if he's tweeting, it's not from a Hooters in Columbus. It's from his own bar in Columbus. Come on, Ian. Other than that, you're right. Bella B is in. Quote, never wanted to hear about Pervin Liar more than right now. Signed, Charger fan.
That's devastating.
And finally, Dave the Rocket Guy, Tan Smack.
Finally.
Captain Khaki Pants will not be the next Dolphins head coach. Signed, Nikki, I am not Alabama's next head coach, Satan.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I shouldn't even have to comment on this. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
You guys, the greatest college coach ever. He's got like 27 national championships. Yeah, that will not go away. We'll never live that down. That's why you want to be careful what you say, especially when you say it a certain way. And one from Borquin Mike. Quote, yesterday was so fun in Jacksonville. Just a shame it took all season to get there, but it's like that was the game that the light came on for Trevor. And other young players just balled their asses off. Hashtag fire Balky. And don't underestimate how important that was for Trevor Lawrence to go into the offseason with a game like that. He needed a game like that. And I did not expect to see that. He needed a game like that. They needed a game like that. That was really good for them and really horrible for Carson Wentz. All right, so when we come back, I want to get into that matchup. I want to talk Black Monday. I mean, we know every single year that the Monday after the end of the regular season, guys will get broken off. Some of this was expected. Some of this was not expected. I want to get into all this. Now that I've read all of your tweets, how about somebody step up on the phones? There's as good of an opportunity on the phones. 1-800-636-8686. You know, I'm almost to that point in the program where we still do not have a third interview. I don't have to have it. But whenever we do that, I sometimes get it in my head that it might be fun to interview one of you clones. Somebody listening, whoever makes the best argument for the best story and or the best athletic background might get an interview from me. Put your hand down, Rit. Rit, you couldn't even get a podcast booked this week, man. Stop it. What athletic background, dude? That hook shot in your driveway? The fact that you have a 131 average in three bowling leagues? Come on, man. We'll see.
Thank you.
Start sending it to me. I want to say this. I'm going to say to you, start sending me your athletic achievements, credentials, background. But I know as soon as I do that, we're going to book a third guest. But if you want to take a shot, go ahead. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. Here is Rich Ackerman.
CBS Sports Radio. Sports Flash.
And Jim, Black Monday has brought some sweeping changes in a couple of spots and a surprise as well, with the Dolphins firing Brian Flores. After just three seasons, owner Stephen Ross cited a difference in views between people in the organization. Ross, a Michigan graduate, leading to speculation that Jim Harbaugh would be headed to South Beach, but he said he won't be the guy that takes the Wolverines coach from Ann Arbor. The Bears cleaned house with both head coach Matt Nagy and GM Ryan Pace both out. Nagy was the NFC Coach of the Year in 2018 when he led the Bears to the playoffs with a 12-4 record but never finished over 500 in the three seasons that followed. The Vikings dismissed Mike Zimmer and GM Rick Spielman, the high point for the duo, the 2017 NFC Championship game, but they missed the playoffs each of the past 2 years. Giants general manager Dave Gettleman has retired. The 70-year-old returned to the organization in 2018, but they went 19-46 under his watch. The college football season ends tonight with Alabama meeting Georgia for the national championship. The Crimson Tide looking for their fourth title in 8 years and their seventh under Nick Saban. They beat the Bulldogs last month in the SEC title game. Baylor remains number one in the AP Top 25.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I want to remind you that not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper's original old-fashioned teriyaki, hot and spicy and peppered, All come in 4-ounce bags, so you can sample different flavors to find the best one for you. Ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? All right, so our phone lines are open really quickly. This guy is trying to take advantage of my offer, an offer to interview one of you. At maybe, Total Big E tweets, I'm a perfect interview candidate, Tan Smack. I'm a world-class wrestler with an undefeated record. Ask the ladies. Let me know what segment works for you. That's kind of the assumptive close. Notice he didn't say, does that work for you? He said, let me know what segment works for you. The assumptive close. I was in sales. I did terrible at sales. Terribly, I should say. But I learned all the things that you were supposed to do well to be good at that profession. I just sucked. But that's the assumptive close. That's one of those things like, I will be in your neighborhood on Tuesday or Thursday. Works better for you, Mr. Prospect. Thursday. Great. 9 o'clock or 11 o'clock. 9 o'clock. Awesome. See you then, click. Where Mr. Prospect thinks to himself, how did that happen? I didn't want to talk to that person. Well, that dude turned me inside out. Yeah, because decision makers are that stupid. I'll never forget that. I used to try and pitch people like that. It went so terribly. I still have nightmares. I have nightmares about two things. College finals that I was not prepared to take. And sales. Outside sales. Cold calling. Prospecting. And them giving me sheets that read like that. Where you would say things like that to real people. And incredibly enough, it didn't go the way you thought. Like, they would teach you things like, well, they have no choice. They have to answer. You leave them no way out. If you say to them, I will be in your neighborhood on Tuesday and Thursday, what works better for you? They have to answer. Don't they? You left them no way out. Yeah, what they don't tell you in sales school is the answer might be bleep you. Neither day works for me. Do I look like an idiot? And that's provided you can even get to the decision maker in order for them to say bleep you. Normally, that's a task in and of itself. How can I get the decision maker on the phone if I can't get past the receptionist who knows what I'm trying to do? Hence, I sit in a studio with a microphone in my face because I could not get past any receptionist. So what I'm saying to you is I could do this for hours. Mad ups, big ups, mad props to outside salespeople, especially those of you who have to cold call and prospect. Like that guy with his assumptive clothes. Hey, Rome, if you need a third guest, I would like to come on and talk about winning both of my fantasy football championships. And spoiler alert, it was all possible due to the advice from Raincoats DeLauro. Hey, Salvador, you're the last guy I put on. Nobody wants to hear about your big win in your fantasy contest, Sal. Like I said, I've made this offer over the years, and I've never actually had to cash it in or convert because we always add a third guest. But if you're going to be in the running for something like that, you need to be an actual athlete or somebody with a great athletic story. And you're neither if you want to call in based on winning your fantasy league. I mean, great. Congrats. That's not enough to get you on the air, though. Not enough for me to do a Q&A with you. Hey, maybe I could put you on the Reinvention Project. Maybe I can put you on the JR podcast. Maybe I could put you on both with that big win in your fantasy league. Because so many people are interested in hearing about that win. And by so many, I mean none. Nobody. Don't confuse you wanting to tell that story with somebody wanting to hear that story.
Nobody.
Nobody. So why don't we wade into Black Monday really quickly? It's a real thing. The day after the NFL regular season ends, a bunch of dudes are immediately told to hit the bricks and don't let the door hit you in the ass. It happens every single year at this time. In fact, this year it even happened a little bit early. The Broncos fired Vic Fangio yesterday. Then the Vikings fired Mike Zimmer and GM Rick Spielman this morning. I'm not surprised by that, but I hate to see that. I hate to see either one, in fact, both of them lose their jobs. Now, it's not a huge surprise that Zimmer got fired. It was pretty clear that he was coaching for his job this season, and then they missed the playoffs, which means we're going to miss out on a head coach who drops ice cold bombs like this.
Do you think you want to get a look at Mond next week?
Not particularly.
Mike, why don't you want to get a look at him?
I see him every day.
Ice.
That I'm going to miss. I'm going to miss that a lot. I hope somebody brings this guy back in stat. I hope that Zim doesn't want time off. I hope he gets another opportunity. I hope somebody brings him in stat. And if they can't bring him in, or he doesn't get the opportunity, or maybe he wants some time off and he wants to kind of reset himself, just make sure you put a microphone in his face every single week. I want him dropping that fire on backup quarterbacks. I want him calling his old boss, Bobby Petrino, a, quote, gutless bastard.
You bastards!
And a, quote, gutless MF. I'll tell you something else. If I'm Kirk Cousins, I'm starting to sweat right about now. Are the new GM and head coach going to want to keep him around? Not so sure about that. However, the firings did not stop with Zimmerman and Spielman. That was quickly followed by Chicago blowing out Matt Nagy and GM Ryan Pace. So you've got five dudes fired in a matter of hours. In other words, if that morning newscaster who roasted Doug Collins was still on the air, or if he is, in fact, still on the air, he'd be needing some ice in ibuprofen for his vocal cords.
If you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Doug Collins.
Cold-blooded. That dude was going to need help from Alec Baldwin.
Hit the bricks, pal!
And they both needed backup from Sid the Kid.
Pack your bags. You're.
Hey, listen. The Bears' firings were much less of a shock than the Vikings. Like, if you thought that Mike Zimmer was coaching for his job, that Matt Nagy was coaching for, well, I don't know what the hell that guy was coaching for. The question about Nagy wasn't whether he was going to come back next season. It was, why wasn't he fired in season? Or why wasn't he fired before the season? I mean, what an absolutely brutal fall from grace for this guy. He goes 12-4 in his first season and then spends the entire offseason freaking out about his kicker situation. Like that was the problem with the team. Then he proceeds to puke all over himself for the next three seasons. Terrible calls, terrible offensive development, terrible everything. I mean, not a surprise at all. The only surprise was that it didn't happen much sooner. But then came the actual surprise. The Miami Dolphins issue a statement that opens with, and I quote, "The Miami Dolphins announced today that head coach Brian Flores has been relieved on his duties." End quote. Right. A typo in the statement. They wrote that he had been, quote, relieved on his duties, not relieved of his duties. Look, I'm not going to tell you how to run your organization, but if you're going to issue a statement about firing a head coach, I don't know, maybe you proofread the very first sentence. And honestly, right about now, I'm guessing Brian Flores probably does feel like he's been relieved on. Because that's a wild move. I'm not sure what's crazier. Brian Flores getting fired today or Joe Judge not getting fired today? If teams are firing guys like Brian Flores, let me repeat this. If teams are firing guys like Brian Flores, how the hell are the Giants justifying not firing Joe Judge? Like, I want to unpack that a hell of a lot more. But Joe Judge has got to be the most relieved human in America right now. I know he's the luckiest human in America right now. Not just because he still has a gig, but because everybody is now going to be focused on why Flores was fired and not on why Judge hasn't been fired. Brian Flores went 10-6 last year. He went 9-8 this year. He won 7 straight games this year. It was not that long ago that he was getting run as the possible coach of the year. And now he's getting run right out of the building. The only reason he didn't have a winning season was his first one, or the only season. And that's when the team was tanking. And he still found a way to win five games. He went 2-0 against Bill Belichick this season and got fired. Has that ever happened before? The guy went 2-0 against Bill Belichick and got fired. So over the last 2 years, there have been plenty of chances for his team to quit. But they never did. They kept fighting for this guy, and he deserves a hell of a lot of credit for it. And for managing to keep things together when Tua could not stay on the field. And for dealing with the nonstop questions and controversy surrounding Deshaun Watson. Because the team owner would not let that story die. He did all of that. And instead of getting rewarded or thanked, he gets pink-slipped. And for who? For what? Is all of this for Jim Harbaugh? I mean, it's got to be that, right? That has to be what Stephen Ross is doing, right? And Michigan fan, you got to be sweating that right about now. Or then again, maybe not. Maybe you're also sick of Harbaugh. Like everybody else got sick of Harbaugh at every one of his previous stops after a few years. Because this hasn't been a few years at Michigan. This has been a long time. A lot more than a few years. So that's got to be the move, right? Ross has to be setting it up to make a move for a fellow Michigan man, right? And let's not get into that just yet.
And I'm not going to be the person who takes Jim Harbaugh to the University of Michigan. I hope he stays there. He's a great coach.
All right, he said it point blank. I'm not going to be the guy to do it. I'm not going to be the guy to do it. But you are the guy who just fired Brian Flores. So if not for Harbaugh, for who? For what? I mean, if you're going to fire a guy like Brian Flores, you better have somebody better lined up, right? You can't just fire this guy without having an idea where you're going next. But apparently it's not Harbaugh. He just said, I'm not going to be the guy to take Jim Harbaugh from Michigan. I mean, are you painting yourself into the corner, or does the billionaire have a better idea, a little something up his sleeve? It's going to be really interesting to see. He better have something lined up, either with Harbaugh or somebody else. There better be a plan, and it better be worth it. Like, I know there were suggestions that Flores and the GM did not see eye to eye. But do you know how hard it is to win in the NFL? The greatest college coach of all time was with the Dolphins back in the day, and he sucked. The second greatest college coach of this era just set an entire organization on fire and didn't make it through his entire first year. It's really hard to win football games in the NFL. The Dolphins of all organizations should know that. They've had 7 winning years in the last 20, and Brian Flores had 2 of them, and they just fired the guy. So I can't wait to see what their plan is. Should be really interesting. All right, hour number 3 is coming up. Phone lines are wide open. Don't go anywhere.